I'm Don Cameron. I'd like to begin because this sermon was really about to introduce myself to everyone and to give you an idea of the kinds of readings or life events that have shaped me as a minister. So I'd like to start for the chalice lighting. We read William Faulkner's short novel, The Bear, not the whole short novel, but just a few lines. I discovered this in freshman English class in college. And given where we are today and people's idea of truth, which is purely subjective, I think this touches me at least. Courage and honor and pride and pity and love, they all touch the heart. And what the heart holds to becomes truth, as far as we know truth. For the prayer and meditation, I chose a reading from Robert T. Weston, and it'll be followed by a moment of silence, but this has always been a favorite reading of mine. This day, set aside all that divides you from others. This day, remember that the world is beautiful and that into the open, eager heart, the beauty enters in, if love be there. This day, be a part of the song of life. There may be grief, but if there be love, it will be overcome. There may be pain, but it can be borne with dignity and courage. There may be difficulty, but it can be turned to strength. Remember that the world is beautiful. Be a part of the song of life. We now have a moment of silence. Amen and blessed be. I began this sermon with a reading, and I'd like to give a little bit of background to this. I served for a long time a church in Maryland that was actually named after A. Powell Davies, and the founding members came out of All Souls Church with him. But when I arrived at this church, the matriarch of the church, who A. Powell Davies had sent out into the wilderness to find a satellite, gave me a fistful of his sermons. And of course, as a young minister, okay, I'll take them. And I listened to them, and they're powerful. And he's well known in our denomination, probably in the modern age, our golden years, the 50s. Anyway. Here's a reading from him, Why I Come to Church. And as I read this, think about where we are now. It's dated, but it still applies. Let me tell you why I come to church. I come to church and would, whether I was a preacher or not, because I fall below my own standards and need to be constantly brought back to them. I am afraid of becoming selfish and indulgent. In my church, my church of the free spirit brings me back to what I want to be. I could easily despair, doubt and dismay could overwhelm me. My church renews my courage and my hope. It is not enough that I should think about the world and its problems at the level of a newspaper report or a magazine discussion. Let's think about that for a little while and how this applies to what's going on now. Back to the reading. It could too soon become too low a level. I must have my conscience sharpened until it goads me to the most thorough and responsible thinking of which I'm capable. I must feel again the love I owe to others. Imagine that concept today. I must not only hear about it, but feel it. In church, I do. I'm brought toward my best, in every way, toward my best. It may not be so for everybody, but for me, this alone would make me seek a church. If I stayed away too long, I would be afraid of slipping into self-centeredness and low ambitions and careless thinking. The sharpness of my moral perceptions might be blunted, and nothing would sharpen them again. I need to be reminded that there are things I must do in the world, unselfish things, things undertaken at the level of idealism. Workaday enthusiasms are not enough. They wear out too soon. Excuse me. I want to experience human nature at its best and be reminded of its highest possibility. And this happens to me in church. Before the sermon, I should also tell you, he became big because he took on McCarthy. He took on racism. And the editor at the Washington Post, the religion page, was a Unitarian. So his sermons were printed every Sunday. And what happened is All Souls exploded. And they had to found fellowship or satellite churches all around the Beltway. And that's really why there's so many Unitarian Universalist churches in the Washington, D.C. area. It's A. Pal Davies. Now for the sermon, may I introduce myself. If you believe everything I say in the pulpit, then you're in the wrong church. I like to tell a story of a friend, almost, a member, who came to me and we talked for 2 hours, more than 2 hours. He was in chronic pain and the doctors couldn't do anything about it. And the next day he committed suicide, which was, to say the least, an emotional blow for me. But one of my fond memories of this person is that, remember, this is the Washington, D.C. area, and we did sermons on politics often, and we would always have a talk back. And this person who I was fond of stood up during the talk back and said, "Don, you know, I really appreciate you and what you're trying to do for the church, but this morning you were just full of blank." And of course, the congregation shrieked back, and I responded, "No, he just endeared himself to me." So I have a joke you probably know, but I'm going to do it anyway. What do you get when you cross a Jehovah Witness with a Unitarian Universalist? Someone who knocks on your door and has no idea why. Also, my dad, when I entered into the Unitarian Universalist ministry, wanted me to assure him that I wasn't joining the Moonies. And he also, because I grew up Episcopal and he was an Episcopalian, wanted to know if the Unitarians believed in the Trinity. And of course, I had to explain to him why we're called Unitarian and not Trinitarian. But anyway, he kept coming. So my path to ministry, it really begins with my brother Jeff. This is an old-fashioned diagnosis, but it is the one that's on record for him: high function mental retardation. What my brother really taught me and has helped me in ministry is patience when faced with difficult behavior. And he taught me the art of loving people for who they are. And those were two important lessons that were hard won in our family because it was dysfunctional at the least. And here we get into that dysfunction. The next influence is my minister in the Episcopal Church. I grew up in the Episcopal Church. The church gave me a deep sense of mystery. This minister would say from the pulpit, "Vietnam is not a question of God and country, but a choice between the two." But as a teenager, growing up in a violent alcoholic family, he took me under his wing. It's a 300-member church. He didn't have time to take me under his wing, but he did because he saw what was happening. And I can say today that Webb Simons is why I became a minister. I really don't have a theological axe to grind. My idea of ministry is to help people where they need it, just like Webb Simons helped me. Another influence for me growing up in Wilmington, North Carolina, was the high school, and I attended high school during the Wilmington 10 riots. The campus, we always left by noon. It was often violent. People would descend on the high school, and the high school was already 3,000 students. And these huge rumbles would come about, and they were guns, knives, what you can think. And on the campus were 20 riot control police all the time. And so tear gas and wrapping belts around my wrist as the rumbles began. And the liberal white students, when the rumble would begin, would go to the black side of things and not the white side, because the white side would cut us. We were too friendly with black people in their mind. But an event in all this is my first year in high school, and I played football. I was a starting tailback simply because of the color of my skin. Remember, the team is integrated. The coach just couldn't pull the trigger to have both a black quarterback and a black tailback. So it was the slow white boy that won the prize. All our teammates, we all knew this, and we kind of laughed about it. But what became my good friend was my fullback, and he was good at football, so he protected me. His parents wanted to have me over for dinner, and I accepted. And once I sat down and began talking and enjoying myself, it hit me like a ton of bricks that his parents are as smart or smarter than mine. And my dad was a podiatrist, but his parents are as smart as my parents are, but his parents had nothing, and my parents had everything. And like I said, that just hit me, and it was just a 360. And I quit sports, grew my hair long, and became political. Coming out of the family that I did, of course, I went to college searching for myself, and I expected to be an English major, but of all things, I ended up with a major in comparative religion. And another mentor in my life was another Episcopal minister, now professor. And Bruce and I became good friends, as that was what happened back then in college. And he was a big deal and was in India, funded, doing research, and he decided to bring six of his favorite students up to India. And so I was able to spend a whole month in India. We rented a bus and did mostly northern India, and we were studying Islam. And Bruce he was very good at language, and he could handle the change in language that would happen every 30 miles almost. But at the end of the trip in the airport, Bruce would write in our diaries. And in my diary, I always talked about life itself. And this entry concerns that I got into the habit in Deva Sharif, actually, in a town where a Muslim shrine, and the farmers would come and pray in the shrine before they went out in the fields, and they would go out right when the sunrise. I mean, it's an unbelievable scene. But I would sit in the corner with their permission as they went through their prayers. And the other thing with this reading is to remember my litany of life itself. You learned to pray in India at a Muslim shrine. I didn't plan it that way. You didn't expect it that way. But it happened. And here's the important part. Remember that religion which lives is life itself, whatever the label or the place or the excuse. Now, another mentor from around here, really, Bernie Loomer. He was dean of Chicago Divinity School for years. And when I was at Star King Seminary, Bernie was a guest professor and took a class from him on Jesus' parables. And it's one of the best classes I've ever had. But Bernie didn't publish. But Bernie was actually, when the truth be told, was father of the process theology. Remember, he didn't publish, but he was the one that actually started the whole thing and stayed in contact with all the people that were published. I remember, though, Bernie, you'll enjoy this. The first time I talked with Bernie, he asked me if I was a football fan. And then he said, you got to be a Bears fan to be in this class. So Bernie had lived in Chicago for a long time. I'd like to share with you a reading that Bernie wrote when he joined the Unitarian Universalist Church in Berkeley, California. So he had transitioned from American Baptist to Unitarian Universalist. And here's what he wrote on joining the church. Church is for enabling us to seek and find some ultimate source of value and meaning. Our trust in this source outruns our knowledge. This reality is to be worshipped for its own sake because it is worthy of our trust. In this relationship of trust and worship, the church is a reminder that we live in terms of a covenant and not in terms of a contract. Church is a living testimony that we live in the context of a mystery that far transcends our reason. We are born in mystery, we sense the impenetrable depth of mystery, and we die in mystery. A sense of value without a sensitivity to mystery is one way of reducing the meaning of life for us. Church is for seeking as well as speaking the truth in love. Church is for the increase of stature, the enlargement of spirit, and the greater freedom of the self. Freedom is not an end in itself. It exists in order to enrich our communal life. Church is for encouraging us to actualize our most creative possibilities. It is also the critic of our limitations and our pretensions. Church is for the understanding and for being understood. Church is for confession, for repentance, and for the compassion of forgiveness. Church is for reminding us that we are still all members of the web of life, that no one is an island, and that no person is an individual outside this context of the web. The web includes more than the present, it includes the past. Church is an important agency by which great traditions become living presences within the community. Church is the communal celebration of our elemental joys and sorrows, of our gains and losses, of great meanings. The church is for taking these elemental qualities and values of life and of weaving them into the very liturgy of the community. I am grateful for this kind of church. I am proud to be included in its membership. Bernie Loomer, June 1985. So what do I bring to the table? I've walked into your life without much mourning, unlike called ministry. So that's why I like to do these sermons, to give you some kind of idea of who's just walked into your life. What I bring to the table is I've served our congregations for over 33 years. And First Unitarian is my fifth interim. I serve the Davies Memorial Church in a suburb of Maryland near Andrews Air Force Base for 12 years. And I should share with you something that happened there as well. It was a privilege for me to serve that church and to become a part of our multiracial project where we integrated a white church in a quickly becoming a quickly black neighborhood. In fact, it already was. Southern Prince George's County is really the wealthiest, most educated black neighborhood in the country. And so we put before ourselves, what do we want to do? Do we want to leave and go somewhere else, or do we want to stay? And we understood if we wanted to stay that we would have to integrate. The church decided to do so, and then a miracle happened, really. The district executive called me up and said a young black minister who just graduated and had a conversion experience and wants to bring Unitarian Universalism to black people, that he was looking for a church to belong to, and he chose us. His name is John Crestwell. We began the talk. I threw him in the pulpit. He was pretty good, and we began talking. Back then, if you don't recall, the UUA was in the habit of taking black ministers and throwing them into lily white congregations and wondering why it didn't work. And it created this line of black ministers who had terrible experiences coming back to the UUA to heal. Well, John and I sat down and we almost simultaneously came up with the idea that we should do ministry together, a co-ministry in the congregation, and do this for 3 years. And John and his family had already been a member of the church for a year, and the congregation loved them. And I had been there for quite some time. So trust between congregation and minister is hard-earned, and it's not overnight. But I had been there for a while, so it all just kind of came together. To make the long story short, John Crestwell, I was his supervising minister. We broke all the rules. He did his internship at his home church. And after 3 years, I went on to Providence, Rhode Island, and left the church to John. And when I left, the church was 60% African American. I also should say that no one of the original membership left. And I didn't add this, but I'll add this on Sunday, and I'm blanking her name, but there was a person, Paula Cole, thank you, universe. Paula Cole, who's a member of All Souls Church for us at Davies when we were going through this process. And the UUA really jumped in. I mean, everybody wanted to make this work. But I get too much credit for it, I believe, because Paula, I think she deserves the credit. She did a class every week, and everyone attended, and the class was white supremacy. And she laid it right out. And so the congregation was ready. It wasn't, they were ready. And so, as I said, no one left. It's the high point of my career, I know that. The interim period, as an interim minister, I see the interim period as an opportunity to kind of push away the push and shove of called ministry, that we have a 2-year period that is a safe time to try new things, a safe time to look at things in new ways, and to slow down and try to figure things out. Because my goal as your interim minister is to make you the most attractable you can be to calling a new minister. In other words, to put it crassly, to get the minister that not only you want, but you need, and not to have the minister because they're the last one standing in this push and pull that we call candidating. There are two sermons soon where I kind of lay out my perspective as an interim minister, how I really see church or the society, congregations, how I see that. And the first one will be August 29th, and the title is A Moral Heart. And so it speaks for itself that the church can be the society's moral heart. And then September 19th, it's entitled A Different Place to Be. And that's pretty self-explanatory. But those, and then after we get that out of the way, and you know where I'm coming from, then I will just begin a normal sermon schedule. Don't beware, it's not going to all be about interim this and interim that. I close with my personal Trinity. Of course, I say Trinity on purpose to get a little reaction. But this Trinity will really tell you who I am and what really shaped me growing up. First is Martin Luther King Jr. He is my model for ministry. And he impacted me growing up in North Carolina immensely. And of course, it's the goal, not the color of your skin, but the content of your character. We have a long ways to go, but at least we're conscious of it and we're trying. The Beatles shaped me like no other. And this sounds very simplistic, but in all the complexity that it can be, all you do really need is love. And that's a religious message, by the way. And the third is Muhammad Ali. I had never watched boxing before, and when he quit, I never watched boxing again. But I was just, I just loved him. And remember, he was the one who didn't let others tell him who he is. You've got to remember that I grew up in the Vietnam era and came within a year of being drafted. So all this was important. So I close by just thanking you for inviting me into your lives. I look forward to get to know you, and I look forward to a very productive interim period, but let me warn you, all interim periods, they're not easy. And so I've chosen this benediction from Wayne Arneson, a friend of mine. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. Yes, as a congregation, we are not alone, and I look forward to our time together. Amen, and blessed be.